Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is Show Me the Money. And we'll be taking your calls on 1-866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 001-760-918-4300. And I'll get to the phones in just a minute. I'd like to, as you know, set the table a little bit, talk a little bit about our topic. There's a Jerry Seinfeld joke that I always just liked where he said, people say you should let your money work for you. I prefer to do the work and let my money relax. And it really just speaks to this thing that we money's supposed to, right? You've heard the saying, do what you love and the money will follow. I mean, isn't that how it's supposed to work? But have you noticed that sometimes it doesn't seem to work that way? And in fact, when I talk to people very often, they say, oh, I tried that, you know, and I went broke. So now I've gone back to just working for money and doing things like that. But what if there is something to that? I remember going on a seminar for budding filmmakers and everyone was pretty down. There was a lot of pessimism in the room, a lot of helplessness, some despair, a little bit of misery. They're artists. But it was about the difficulty in getting funding for producing and distributing independent movies. And one independent film producer got up and she was just incredibly inspirational. And she had this amazing idea for a movie and someone in the room stood up and just as cynically as you could say it said, sounds great, honey, but where's the money going to come from? And she didn't miss a beat. She just said, the money's going to come from wherever it is now. I got an email from an artist a little while back. She's a friend and an artist. And she raised a question. She said, you know, I've done all this work, both inner and outer. And I'm now at a point where my savings are running out. And I'm going to have to take a job to support myself. And I'm feeling really sad about it. And you know, I don't want to work at something that I don't want to do because that's going to take a lot of time and energy away from continuing to work on what I do really want to do. And that's an amazingly common dilemma. I don't know if you're there or you've been there, but most of us want to be paid for doing what we love. But at some point we need the money to live our life before that magical equation kind of kicks in. Here's just part of what I said in reply. It's really difficult to have a successful business when your life sucks. Not impossible, just difficult. And if you're spending all your time and energy worrying about money, it's going to affect every aspect of your business. And it's going to encourage you to make poor business decisions because you feel like you need the money, negotiate poor business deals because you feel like you need the money, and basically be led around by the nose, by fear and by greed because you need the money. And so here's a fairly universal business guideline. Don't need the money. Now, how you actually do that, well, we're going to talk about that later in the show. But for now, let's go to the phones. If you want to get in, the number's to call, 866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 866-254-1579. Or you can reach the show from outside of the United States by dialing your country code and then 760-918-4300. And let's begin in Portland with Jordana. Jordana, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me on. Gosh, where to begin? To give you the short version, I've currently gone back to waitressing, which is kind of fun, and I'm okay with it. And I've gotten my finances back in gear, but in order to my passion and do what I love, it involves drawing in at least $250,000 in seed funding, which I spent about 3 years looking for and rode the roller coaster of. Oh, we're so close. Oh, no, it's gone. The investors slipping through my fingers, et cetera.
Right.
And, you know, there were lots of good reasons, and I'm totally okay with the journey it took me on because it was freaking beautiful. But I'm ready now. You know, I feel like I have brought myself to where I can live and join no matter what, and I'm happy and I'm ready, but I'm sort of caught in between. All right, you still have to go into the restaurant and get the bills paid.
Right.
But I have to come to the pavement and look for investors again, especially when it's not your stereotypical venture capitalist that would be one of my investors. So I don't really even know what my specific question is, except where do I draw the line between sort of doing and being in that happiness to draw in a large chunk of money as opposed to just, oh, let's draw in clients.
So this is one of those times where I'm really grateful that I know that you've got wisdom inside you, because, you know, I don't have like a, oh, well, what you need to do is call Bob. Here's his number, 866. this is just one of those real things where when we're going to create something in the world and it's something that's bigger than what we're used to creating, we don't know. We don't know how long it'll take. We don't know how easy or difficult it will be. We can feel at times overwhelmed by it, and at times we can feel like, oh, we're going to kick its butt.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just real. So what I do in situations like that, what I coach people to do in situations like that, is take your attention off the big picture for a little bit. Like, you know, you're not going to forget where you're headed.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you're driving to, you know, from Portland down to L.A., you're not going to forget that you're headed to L.A. You don't need to, like, stick a big post-it on the windscreen saying, I'm going to L.A. Here's a picture of L.A. Here's a vision board with me in L.A. on it. It's like, no, you know, you're headed towards L.A.
Yeah. The universe doesn't let me forget. I've tried to forget.
There you go. Sorry about that, you know, on behalf of the universe. But what you can do now is just put your attention on, literally, there is always the goal, the reality, and the next step. So you know where you're headed at the moment. And I would look at this both in terms of the big picture and raising the money. Because the money is just, from what you've said, the money is just a means to an end. And I, you know, we could explore, and we won't now, but at some point you might want to just really explore, is that still the only way to create what you want to create once you've got the money? What is it you want to create, by the way? What is that big dream?
It's basically a fitness club style model of a creative arts center. So it's an art center that is not only more convenient for families and individuals to access and dabble in the arts, but through the convenience, they can use it to explore themselves and obviously grow in consciousness. So it's sort of a, you know, larger outcome of using the arts to help create a better society.
Okay, so first thing you need to do is pick up a book called Making the Impossible Possible.
Okay.
Which happens to be about a guy who created an art center in the middle of one of the poorest communities in Pittsburgh, just outside Pittsburgh, that now has millions of dollars of funding. And he just, in the last 2 years, received there's a $500,000 or $1 million grant personally for the work that he's done in putting that together.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that just might inspire you just a little.
Yeah. The only difference, though, I will pick up the book, and thank you. The difference is that, and this is where I think it's also my own inner blockages of wanting to feel like I'm breaking through these roadblocks. That's stupid. Like, I don't need to be the barrier breaker necessarily.
Well, that's the thing is, here's a way I described this to a client actually just earlier today. I was talking to a client, and we were talking about heroic overwhelm. That a lot of us get into this game where it's about us overcoming. And if we're any good at it, we overcome. And then we get like a kick inside and people go, wow, you overcame that. And then we look for the next obstacle to take on. And the thing is, what that's like is creating a pretend wall. Like, did you see the, there's a movie coming out next year called Despicable Me. And the previews have all shown this little kid flying his toy airplane into the great pyramid of Giza, and the whole pyramid collapses because it was just actually somebody had stolen the real pyramid and just put this little inflatable up. So it's like we create this inflatable wall and then spend all our time mastering getting past it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got 20 ways of going over it and 3 ways of going through it and 16 ways of going around it, when in fact we created the wall in the first place.
Yeah.
So
completely.
If there was no wall, in other words, if this was just a straightforward do stuff to get stuff proposition, what would be the next stuff you did?
And that's what I'm, in terms of like the book you recommended, I don't want to see it as a wall anymore. It's not a wall. I am going about it in a different way, to the point where I don't really have very many role models to look at. I'm doing it as a for-profit.
So Jordana, I'm gonna stop you, because now I've asked you twice now. What would you do? And you've told me some really interesting stuff about you. I don't care about you, but I don't care about the stuff. What would be, if you were, if this was a straightforward, there's just some stuff to do, what would be the next step towards creating this art center?
Drawing in the right partner. The right.
Okay, so drawing in the right partner's a milestone. That's a goal. Uh-huh. That's something that you'll achieve. What would be the next actual thing that Jordana would do if we were following you like video diary style? What would be the next thing
that
you would do?
I'm already doing day to day, trying to contact the right people. But the problem, I hate using those words, but the thing is that it's stuff I've been doing for a while now, and so I'm sort of.
Have you? I'm going to give you one more chance. Okay. What would be the next thing that you would do, even if you were going to do it before you called me? What would be the very next action you would take if this was just a straightforward, I'm going to do stuff and get stuff?
Well, physically, I'm in the process of updating my LinkedIn profile, and then I have to go into the website and change a few things. And
okay, great. So update your link. Update your LinkedIn profile. Go into the website and update your information. Okay, I want to suggest to you that in reality, that is all you need to do.
Okay.
Now, when you've done that, if the money isn't there yet, and, you know, there's a reasonable chance, at least 50-50 it won't be, there might be something else to do then.
Mm-hmm.
But if you let it slow down that much, because you're living so far in the past and the future around this, that you have no power. Your power is right here. It's where your body is. It's in the present.
Yeah.
So if you can slow it down enough, not only will you do what needs to be done, which at this point, the only thing that you need to do, the only thing that you need to do is update your LinkedIn profile.
Yeah.
It's going to get a lot easier. And in the quiet that will start to be there, which at first might feel like, where's the noise? But in the quiet that starts to be there, when you realize, actually, the only thing I have to do is this, you'll also start hearing some inspirations and wisdom that will make this much less of a linear thing and that won't be about trying what you tried in the past and, oh, I guess I better do something. So you can't hear that stuff when you're so busy working through the problem. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Okay.
Totally, yeah.
So that's it. So I want you to do the only thing you need to do, which is update your LinkedIn profile. And then when that's done,
do the next thing.
Do the next thing. And in the space that will open up when you slow down that much, listen.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Jordana.
Thank you so much.
This is the thing. Look, we all do it. I do it. Maybe we don't all do it. Maybe it's just me and Jordana. But we get speeded up. We get excited. We want to go for it. We want to do it. We want to create it. But when you actually go the other way, it's counterintuitive. When you slow it right down and just look at what is in front of you, 99 times out of 100, what's in front of you is something you can do. And as I said to Jordana, in the space that opens up when you slow down like that, that's when you really hear your wisdom. That's when your inspiration can really come through. And that's when things get kind of easy and exciting and fun. Let's go to Karen in Tampa. Karen, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi. I was wondering what, if you could give me some advice as to what I need to do to get an agent to look at my work. If I'm interested in publishing with Hay House.
Okay. So I'm gonna check something with you first, because there's two when that somebody asks that question, there's one of two things usually. One is sometimes somebody just genuinely has never looked into the books, doesn't know anything, and then I will give you this answer anyways, which is you go to the library and you pick up the 2010 or 2009, you can actually do it in a bookshop, of the writer's handbook, and in it you'll find a list of agents. Of literary agents, and they're divided out by section, and you can pretty quickly create a short list of the kinds of agents who handle the kind of book that you wanna do, and it will explain how you put together a proposal and create it. So that's the literal answer.
Okay.
Is there something more to the question, like, well, I know that, but, or is it just you just didn't have that piece of information?
Well, I've written about 7 chapters or so already, and mm-hmm. 3 of them have been edited. And I was talking to one of my friends who's published and telling her that I wanted to publish with Hay House, and she was explaining to me that I don't have to have the entire product complete, that I can actually try to get an agent now and start that process.
Yeah, that's true. You generally speaking, and it's, you know, every publisher is different and every author likes to do it a little bit differently. Generally speaking, you need a summary of the book. You need a sample chapter, table of contents, and something about why your book is going to make their, you know, bottom line and mission statement be fulfilled.
Okay.
You know, that's all you know. And again, here's the question I really want to ask you, Karen, if I can.
Uh-huh.
Is it a great book?
Of course.
Well, no. It's not, of course, because it's amazing how often I ask that question and people go, well, I mean, it's good.
No, it's fabulous because it's a practical guide for shifting consciousness, and it's what I'm sort of looking out of my office because I'm at work, but it was what I was writing while I lived in New York City, and it's the process of when, you know, things get broken down and you start seeing the world differently and seeing that you're not a victim of the world you see and how you shift your consciousness. And it's really simple because, you know, we all have these questions, and sometimes we read these metaphysical books and they're so extravagant and like, oh, you just need to do affirmations. But like, really coming from a perspective of, you know what, this is my struggle and here's how I dealt with it. And maybe you can benefit from this too. And I just feel like there's a lot of feeling in it, and I feel like sometimes people need that. You know, they need like.
So can you tell me about somebody who went through that consciousness shift that you talk about, and how the material in the book helped them do it?
Well, I haven't published a book, so I can't tell you that I've.
Well,
had...
but if there's an idea in the book about shifting consciousness and understanding. I don't mean through the book, but in other words, have you or anyone that you know, have you shared this with somebody who was able to use it to make their life better?
The person who edited a few of the chapters for me is also someone who was able to benefit from it. So, I haven't shown this to a lot of people, but...
Here's where I'm going with it, Karen.
Okay.
And again, you don't have to do anything I say, right? This is me. This is Karen's going to do what Karen does, and it'll be great because it's Karen's. But I consulted years ago in the UK on an ad campaign to get people to buckle their seatbelts in the passenger seat now, the passenger seat of cars, which was not at that point legal and leads to not being buckled up in the front, actually leads to a remarkable number of traffic fatalities. And I went in and they were very proud of their campaign, and it was a gory campaign. They showed me all these horrible pictures and they showed me all the scientific data about why their campaign was going to make a difference. And there was a group of about 8 people, and I listened to it all and I asked them one question. I looked around the room and I said, how many of you buckle up when you sit in the front seat? And they all got real sheepish and real quiet, and none of them raised their hands. And I said, if you can't convince yourself to buckle up with all the research you've done and all the additional information and the campaign you've put together, why do you think that it's going to make a difference to people who don't have any of the background? And in the end, by the way, they changed the campaign. It was a quite extraordinary campaign that they put together. The question I'm asking you is the same thing, because if I'm reading, if I'm at Hay House, okay, and I'm reading one of the dozens of proposals that's going to hit my desk, then I need to see something in there that's going to either touch my life,
mm-hmm.
that I can, that and one of the ways I'm going to know that, without having read the whole book, is to hear the story of how it's touched other people's lives, how the material in that book has. I know the book doesn't exist.
Right, right.
So if it was me, and it's not, but if it was me, what I would be going out and doing as I went, you know, maybe before and after I went to the library or bookstore and copied down the names and addresses of some agents and put my little package together for them, is I would be finding as many people as I could, and I would be guiding them through the content of the book.
That's good. Thank you for that.
And what will happen is not only will you grow in your confidence in the material that actually this does really matter and this is really worth sharing with people, but you'll begin to have all sorts of reference experiences you can include in your proposal of the difference it's made with people, how quickly it can make that difference. You'll be able to share some of their stories, and suddenly it becomes much more solid and much less of a, well, I think it's a good idea.
Right, right.
And much more of a, hey, let me tell you about how this changed this person's life. In fact, let me go you one better. Let me sit down. I've taken 10 people through this in the last 2.5 hours at Starbucks. Let me take you through it. Then what you'll find is it won't just be about, oh, I hope somebody gives me a chance. It'll be like, hey, you know, are you a freaking idiot? Look at what I can do with this.
Right.
Now, I'm not
right.
saying obviously you have to come off all brash and I don't mean it like that.
No.
But I mean, on the inside, when you have that degree of certainty and clarity about what this process does, because you've not just for you, I'm sure it worked for you, but for other people by sharing it, then your proposals that you send to the literary agents and ultimately that get sent to the publishers are going to be of a completely different quality. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
And also, you're very welcome, because you're going to have fun doing it. A lot more fun than you would if you thought that your real job was to find a literary agent.
There. Yeah. 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 No, you're right. I would love to do that, actually.
Oh, fantastic.
That's a great idea.
Go forth. Raise consciousness.
Thank you.
And call us back when you've done it.
All right. Thanks. Well, we're all
Thank
trying
you.
To do that, right?
Well, you don't have to do the whole world. I mean, you know, just do like Tampa.
All right.
I'll take care of LA, and you know, we'll meet in the middle.
All right, sounds good. Thank you,
Karen. Bye. It really is heartwarming to me, and I mean that in a good sense, not in a Disney sense, because you know I can have my heart warmed by watching Old Yeller, and that doesn't necessarily raise my consciousness. But it's that people are beginning to get that one of the most powerful impacts we can have on the planet, on what's going on in Haiti, on what's going on in your marriage, on what's going on in politics, on what's going on in different parts of the world, is by raising consciousness, is by beginning to see at another level, at a level that transcends the black and white, left and right, red and blue kind of level that a lot of us get caught up in and stuck in. And there's some interesting research. I was talking to a guy named Bill Harris, who runs Centerpoint Institute. And he was talking about how there's actual research that shows it's a remarkably small, it's something like 11.5% of humanity need to have a bump in consciousness for it to spread through the whole planet. Now, I don't know about the science of it. I don't know if that's true. But to me, it's kind of like the starfish story, where the guy's walking along the beach and he sees all these starfish washed up, and he sees this woman picking up starfish and throwing them back into the ocean. And he goes to her, what are you doing? And she says, well, I'm saving starfish. I'm raising the consciousness of starfish on the planet. And he looks around, and there's millions of starfish washed up on the shores. And he says to her, well, you know, what's the point? You can't make a difference. Look around you. Look how bad it is. You can't possibly make a difference. And in fact, she looks around, and she briefly kind of sees, boy, you know, there's an awful lot of washed up starfish there. And then she kind of smiles, and she reaches down and she picks up a starfish and she throws it back into the ocean. And she smiles at the man and she said, made a difference to that one. We're going to be back with more of your calls. The numbers to call if you want to get in, 866-254-1579. It's toll free, 866-254-1579. Tracy, you are next up. And Sheila and Jackie, if you hang on, I will get you on. And we will talk to all of you right after this break. Bye-bye for now.
4300.
1, 2, 3, hit it!
Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about money today. And before I go back to the phones, I mentioned early on in the show that not needing the money is one of the absolute keys to getting it and to making good money decisions and to being able to do what you love and have the money follow. And I'm sure some people are going, well, great, how do I do that? And there are a couple main ways. One way to not need the money is to recognize that your well-being is not dependent on your bank balance. And if you're not sure how that works, your sense of who you are as a person, your sense of what's possible, your sense of wellness, you know, if you've been sick or if you've known somebody who was sick, you know, suddenly the money thing, it was like, yeah, whatever. It became background. Your well-being is your well-being. And I don't just mean physical well-being. I mean your spirit. I mean your just sense of, hey, actually, I'm okay. Actually, I'm well. Actually, everything's fine. I mean, it doesn't look like it. There's chaos under the heavens, but it's okay. The second one, and the one that most people go, well, yeah, okay, I've got innate well-being, I got it. How do I get more money? Well, okay, there's two ways to have more money. One is to make more of it, and the second is to keep more of it. Now, keeping more of it is actually remarkably simple. Not necessarily easy, but very simple. If you recognize that you need $3,000 a month to live comfortably, then set yourself a goal of having $18,000 in a reservoir savings account before you go full-time with your do-what-you-love business. Because there's a big difference between doing a job and doing a day job because you have to, because you tried doing your what you love, but the money monster beat you. Well, that's not fun. Nobody likes that. But what if you were taking a job to fund your financial freedom project? What if you were doing your job, you were waiting tables, you were working in an office, because that was enabling you to, in the rest of your time, to create this vision of what you really wanted to do with your life? There's an old joke, okay? You've probably heard it. You've probably heard it told better than I'm about to, but bear with me. I do have a point. There's a flood, and a true believer is caught in the flood, and somebody comes by in his car and says, hey, we're getting out of town. The flood's coming. You know, get in. And the guy goes, no. God will save me. I'm going to be okay. You go on. And the flood does come and the water starts to rise. And a guy comes by in a boat, you know, because the streets are filled with water, and says, hey, you know, come on, climb aboard. We'll get you out of here. You know, the flood's only going to get worse. And the guy goes, no. I'm God's going to take care of me. God's going to take care of me. It's all going to work out. I have faith. And finally, the waters climb so high that the guy is on top of the roof of his house. And a helicopter comes by, and they call out from the helicopter, we're going to send down a ladder. Climb on. And the guy goes, no. It's okay. It's okay. God's going to save me. It's going to be okay. Well, of course, the guy drowns. And he gets to heaven, and he's a little bit miffed. And so he gets an audience with God, and he says, what happened? And God says, what do you want? I sent you a car, a boat, and a helicopter. Nearly everyone I know who's broken through financially to doing what they love as a successful business, me included, at some point had to stop trying to control where the money came from and just open up to it coming from wherever it wants to come from. Now, that might sound too easy, or that might sound like, I could never take another job. I need to only make money from playing guitar or whatever it is for you. But here's what happened. This was, remember I told you the story of the artist at the beginning? Here's what she did. She made a list of all the things that she loved to do, even the ones that weren't directly to do with her art, and all the things she didn't like about the prospect of being employed full time. And in doing that, she just cleared some space in her mind, and as happens, her wisdom popped up into that space. And within hours, she was inspired to post an email to a nanny website. And a few hours later, she received a reply from a wealthy family in her neighborhood. And less than 72 hours after that email, after letting go of trying to control where the money came from, she'd agreed to a well-paid position, cooking and looking after a young kid, two things she loved doing, which gave her the time and the money to do her art with ease and freedom. and you know, got a letter back about a you know, another person, you know, who was involved in that whole situation, who just was inspired by it. And she was a spiritual teacher, and she wrote me within 72 hours of letting go of trying to make money only from her spiritual teaching. She got hired to coach singing, something she loves doing, by someone who'd attended one of her yoga classes. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen like that for you, and all you need is 72 hours. So here's what you do. You know, just take 72 hours and let go for 72 hours, and it's all going to work. But it might. I mean, what's your life's work? What if you could be paid to do what you love, what would you choose to be paid to do? That's a starting point. Here's another starting point. Figure out how much money you want to have each month while you're working towards doing what you love full time. And if you like rituals, if you like sort of letting go stuff, create a ritual for yourself. Let go of trying to tell God or life or the universe where the money's got to come from. Just imagine yourself opening up to the money coming in from wherever it is now. And if you get inspired, follow up. And if something cool happens in the next 72 hours, send me an email, michael@geniuscatalyst.com. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Tracy in Lawrence, Kansas. Tracy, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I guess I'm just wanting some, I guess, reassurance. I don't know. I killed myself to get my degree. I'm 45 years old. I have two children. I was a stay-at-home mom for a really long time, and then when we got divorced, I went back to school, got my degree in 2005, literally killed myself doing it. And
let's be fair, Tracy. You didn't literally kill yourself.
No, I did. I ended up in the hospital. I was life-flighted.
You might have come close. You might have come close, but unless you're phoning me from beyond the grave, in which case I'm going to absolutely take John Holland's show over. It's okay. Sorry. Side point. But yeah, okay. So you really pushed it too far.
I was very close to death at that. But anyway,
I got it.
So I get my degree, and I finally, you know, think that, oh, finally things are going to start happening. And then I go to work for, God forbid, I went to work for Sprint, and mm-hmm. I got laid off. I worked there for like a year and a half, got laid off. Went to work for a software company and got laid off. And then I mm-hmm. went to work in human services, actually, as a director of development and got laid off. And I am just, I don't know what I'm doing at this point. I'm disgusted and upset and hopeful at the same time. So I just need, I guess, some direction. I don't know what direction
tell me about hopeful.
Hopeful.
What is that about? You know, why are you hopeful? I mean, your life sucks. You almost died, and then you got laid off from all these jobs. Where do you get off having hope? Where's that coming from?
I have a lot of faith.
Okay.
And my faith, you know, if God did send me a helicopter, I would be on it.
Right. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about that faith and from that faith. Okay.
Okay.
What do you know from that place of faith in you? What do you know?
I'm going to be taken care of from month to month. I really don't worry about money. I really don't. Okay. So help me. Strange things just happen to where I just always have enough to get by. At this point, and literally, I just have very strange circumstances where somebody will mysteriously send me $300 or $500 on top of my unemployment that I get and my child support, of course.
Okay.
So there's these little things that keep happening that are signals to me that says, yes, I know you're trying. Yes, you will get by. Don't worry about the small stuff.
So here's what I know. In order for someone to feel stuck, they need to feel like they're somewhere that they're supposed to get to. So where is it that you're trying to get to that you're not getting? Because if I hear it, I'm not questioning this at all. Okay. I hear it in your voice. You do have that faith and you do have that kind of knowing that you're going to be okay.
Right.
So given that you're going to be okay, tell me a little bit more about the stuck. Where is it that you think you should be or that you want to be that you're stuck in getting? Because let me just say a little bit more about that, because here's the difference between waiting and sitting. right? Two people can be on a bench. One of them's just sitting. One of them's waiting. The one who's waiting is going to get stressed. The one who's waiting is going to get fed up. The one who's waiting is going to get frustrated. The one who's just sitting is just going to sit. So tell me about stuck.
I'm the waiting one.
Yeah, so what is it that you're waiting for?
I'm waiting for a job where I don't get laid off. A steady...
Okay. Well, I got. You know, I really do have news for you. They don't exist.
There are
jobs that you can stay at for a long time, and you might die before they lay you off. But, you know, there's no such thing as a job where at some point they might not make a decision for whatever reason to not give you that. So if you're waiting for that, honestly, Tracy, you know, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Now, I don't believe that you really are, because you don't have to wait. But given that that's not in the realm of, in the reality game, what would you love? What would you love to, let's say that it does just happen. What would it be if you got the gift, if you got the helicopter, but it wasn't just a helicopter, it was like a luxury helicopter with a bed and a kitchen? You know, what would it be that came by and rescued you on its white horse?
Job-wise, it would be something that I feel useful doing, that I have some appreciation of the work and I'm respected for the work that I do. You know, when I got laid off at Sprint, I actually had my boss, he called me a couple days later and he says, you know, I hate to ask you this, but can you give me your password and all your information so I can get into your work? Because I haven't been really keeping tabs on you, so I don't really know what you've been doing. So I gave him all this information.
Mm-hmm. I'm missing something, Tracy. What did that mean to you?
After they laid me off, he had a respect for my work. After they laid me off, he came to me and said, oh my God, you did a fantastic job. Huh. Well, thanks, idiot, because you just laid me off.
Right.
You know?
Well, sure. So look, I mean, if we're having a discussion about whether or not there's idiocy in the American workplace, look, Dilbert's been successful for so long for a reason. I you're preaching to the choir here. I don't think that's an idiot. Well, I got that bit. Okay. I want to know about Tracy now. Like, what would she like if I was, you know, if God and I were having our weekly office meeting and we said, oh, we need to get a job for Trace. What should we give her this time? What would you like us to give you?
I guess I don't follow. Just one that I'm respected at and one that I'm not.
So great.
That
so
I'm this challenged is this, that and I'm sorry.
So let me offer you this, Tracy, and it's really just an offer. It's not advice in the sense that it's not necessarily going to take you to a place, but
right.
It is something that I know, and I know it from having done this for 20 years and I know it from myself. Whenever you look to get your inner world fed from the outer world, you're going to suffer and you're going to struggle, because the worst way to change how it feels on the inside is by trying to change circumstances on the outside. That doesn't mean you can't get a job. And it doesn't mean you can't get a job that you really love, and it doesn't mean you can't get a job where you feel like your work matters and where you're challenged and all of that stuff. But to the extent that you're looking for respect, that doesn't come from out there. That's
inside
you. Well,
I respect myself. There's not a question that I respect myself.
But there's something, and I'm just taking this from what you've said, okay? I'm not trying to put anything in. I'm not trying to spout some theory. Somehow, there's something that feels like if only they did this, if only they behaved differently, I would get to feel differently.
I'm just and looking I, for a job I don't can, get laid
and,
off.
And I can just tell you, I can just tell you that as you're looking in the wrong direction. It seems to be my days for, you know, old teaching stories and bad jokes, but you know, Mullen Ezruddin outside, you know, he's pacing back and forth under a street light late at night. Neighbors start to come out to see what he's doing. He says, oh, God, I'm really sorry. I hope I'm not disturbing you. I've lost my keys. They all come out, and they're all looking for the keys. And finally somebody says, well, Mueller, where did you last see them? And he said, oh, in my kitchen. And he said, well, why are we out here? And he says, well, the light's terrible in my kitchen. And, you know, we can watch, like, think about a DVD, okay? You look at a DVD, what you see on screen, when you put a DVD in the player, what you see on screen looks real. In other words, it looks recognizable. We see the people, but we know at some level that what we're seeing is an illusion. It looks real, but it's a movie. If you take the DVD itself and you look at it, and you look at it in the light, you'll see these tiny little grooves, almost like on an old, you know, record player used to have.
Right.
That's where the information really is. Now, it's completely intangible. You can't see the information, but that's where it really is. But people tend to watch the DVD because that's the bit they can see. And when we have a lack inside us, when we feel like something is missing, we tend to look outside us to find it because the light's better out there. It's easier to see the images on the screen. But the real source of your well-being, the real source of your wholeness, the real source of what you're looking for, it's not out there. It's not in the job. It's not in a new partner. It's not in more money. That's not to say you can't have a new job, a new partner, and more money. But those things, all they can do is temporarily give you a little bit of access to what's already inside you. I have no idea if any of this is making any sense to you, is it? It's okay if it's not. It's okay if it's not.
A little bit. I've done a lot of work on me over the last, you know, 15 years at least. So I'm really, I don't know, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to listen to what you're saying and trying to identify with it as to something that's out there that I'm looking for that I don't have in me.
Well, how about a job that's going to make you feel respected?
Yeah.
That's
out there. But I have respect for myself and my friends.
Well, that's great, but apparently, Tracy, and I'm just basing this on the fact that we're still talking about it, apparently that's not enough. I mean, if it was, you'd be going, you know what? I don't need respect from out there because I've got it from myself. We wouldn't be having this conversation if that was enough.
Okay.
If that felt like enough, would we?
Well, there's other, I mean, it's mainly the steady employment thing without being laid off. It's,
right. But here's the thing. And look, I can't fix everything on a call, but I can hopefully just point you in a direction where you're going to find more useful stuff than the place you've been looking. Is if you just separate out the two things. So when somebody says to me repeatedly, I want a job where I won't get laid off. What I hear is I want to feel safe and secure. And when somebody says to me, I want a job where they respect me, what I hear is at some level, my respect for myself doesn't feel like enough. It needs some form of external reinforcement or validation to really feel real and solid. I'm just saying this is just from my side. I'm not saying this is true. So what I can tell you is actually going out and applying for jobs, especially because it sounds like you've been able to get some pretty good jobs.
Yeah.
That's much easier when you're not also trying to get security and respect from those jobs. If all you're looking for is a job, you're going to get one. But if you're looking for a job that satisfies this missing respect, security thing, that's really hard. And you're probably going to struggle. And it sounds like that's kind of where you've been.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, Tracy, have you, I don't know why I hate to do this, but I hate to do this. Have you read my book?
No, I haven't.
Okay. If leave your details with Joe. In other words, don't hang up when we take you off air.
Okay.
And we'll send you out a copy.
Okay.
And hopefully we can kind of continue this conversation in that way.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Tracy.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye. Let's go to Sheila in Scottsdale. Sheila, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. This is the first time that I'm listening to your show. Blessings to you. It's
Thank
a joy
you.
To listen to your wisdom. I hear everything that you're saying, and like the last caller, I'm trying to apply to everything. It seems like I grasp pieces, and then it goes away again, and I just want to keep it with me. I just need to know, just like everybody else, probably you just, I'm going to just be a little bit redundant here, but I just need that individual guidance. I don't know what the next step or uncertain of what my next step should be in the quest to own a successful business. I started the business about 5 months ago. I got fed up after 10 years and really didn't do what I needed to do. I just said, forget it. I'm just going in business. So I didn't have too much of the financial backup for that. I attended networks, startup business, advertising for the last 2 months. No callbacks, only one that didn't lead to anything. I've been coasting along, trying to be positive and not really think about, just think about my target, which is trying to get the business going without thinking about the money part. But I'm just kind of approaching that deadline. And I today, for the first time in maybe about 4, 5, 6 months, I went to an interview, part-time basis, temporary basis, and it came out good. I won't know anything probably about a month from now, but it's just a means to an end.
So except for the fact that you aren't making the money you want from it, do you love doing the business that you've started?
I do. I haven't done anything. I haven't really earned anything at all.
Right. Okay. So now I got that.
Yeah.
So yeah. I always remember I had a client who told me, I'm going to make this a little concise because we're running close to the end of the show, but hopefully this will be helpful. I had a client who was, telling me that he hated his job, and I had listened to him, and I said, I don't believe you. And he said, what do you mean? And he said, well, it doesn't sound to me like you hate your job. And we talked a bit, and it came out that he thought he needed to sort of hate and resent his job because what he really wanted to do in his case was write screenplays.
Oh.
And we explored together what it would be like to, instead of in any way resenting or feeling like a bit of a failure for getting that job that allowed him to pursue the dream and gave him time and support in pursuing what he really wanted to do, if he started to really appreciate what it did for him. And it just sounds to me like if you go into this job search with a sense of defeat, like, oh, well I blew it, and maybe I'll keep trying sort of in my spare time, but I kind of lost. You're not going to be the one that we're going to pick out and hire.
Okay.
But if you bring the Sheila to those interviews who entered into her business with enthusiasm and who would still be incredibly enthusiastic about it if it started to work, that Sheila, she's going to do really well in the interviews. And she's going to wind up really enjoying that work. It's not going to replace her passion. She probably will still keep working on starting her business. But it's not just because you go left to get there and you thought the path was right doesn't mean that you've given up on the path. It just means you're taking a different route, and your route might go by way of a couple of jobs. Would that be okay with you if in 5 years from now you could call the show and go, let me tell you about my amazing successful business, and oh yeah, by the way, for a year or two I took some jobs?
Yes.
Well, that's what you get the chance to create for yourself.
I got it.
All right. Thank you for phoning in, Sheila.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you to you for listening. We will be back with a brand new show next week. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you then. Bye-bye for now.